From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, TGIF. Can you believe it's Friday already? I always say that every Friday. I can't believe how the weeks just fly by. But hey, as they say, time flies when you're having a good time. And we are always having a good time here on Current Sports. And man, have there been some really just interesting, funny, just weird stories throughout this week. And you know, one of those stories is pretty funny on the funny side of things. Is if you haven't heard, but UFC Women's Champion Ronda Rousey, if you don't know who Ronda Rousey is, she's the biggest active star in mixed martial arts right now. She is one tough girl. I mean, she's unbelievable, folks. If you haven't seen her fight, she's very talented. She went on the air on Power 106 FM and stated that she could put an end to Floyd Mayweather, who is the biggest boxer in the game today. She could put an end to Floyd Mayweather Jr.'s unbeaten streak. She went on the air and said that, quote, "I would drop down to the ground and crawl over to him as fast as I can. I wouldn't even stand up. I wouldn't be near him. I would just do a little army crawl over there, and he would have to run away. I would just be skittering after him like the one dude in Bloodsport that was doing the whole monkey crawl fight system. I would do that. I would just bear crawl over there, too low for him to hit me, tackle him down, and that would be it." Oh, boy, that's interesting stuff. But you know what? Even if Floyd does decide to comment on this, I mean, dude, you can't fight a woman. I mean, that's just not right. You know what I mean? My mom raised me. Don't put your hands on a woman. That fight will never happen. But hey, I mean, Rousey can dream, can't she? I think she actually would. That would be a really good fight, to be honest with you guys. I mean, Ronda is tough. No matter what gender we're talking here, Ronda can beat a lot of my friends. Trust me, she could probably whoop my butt, to tell you the truth. But you know, it's just an interesting story because you know, we always see this contrast between boxers and MMA and who would win in a fight. Me personally, I'm taking MMA all day because boxers, I mean, they just punch. They don't get on the ground. They don't kick. They don't know how to do grappling moves on the ground. It's a different ball game, baby. So I thought that was a very interesting story, okay? But all right, ladies and gents, we have a packed show for you. Again, if you want to call in throughout this entire show, we'll be taking your calls this entire hour, okay? 517-355-9527. Again, that number is 517-355-9527. We'll be talking later on in the hour about Nicholas Lidstrom as he got his number retired. One of the greatest, not even just Red Wings, one of the greatest hockey players of all time, folks. He got his number retired yesterday at the Joe. If you want to call in and express your thoughts on just Lidstrom's legacy, if you will, Matt and I will be weighing in on that. Later on, we'll also talk about MSU and Iowa as Michigan State seems to get back on track with a very impressive win over the Iowa Hawkeyes last night at the final regular season game at the Breslin Center for Michigan State. A pretty impressive win. So we'll be talking about all that and so much more. And Isaiah Thomas, the rumors that he possibly could be coming back to Detroit as a general manager taking over for Joe Dumars, that is definitely reaching there, ladies and gents. But those rumors have certainly hit the fan, and many people are talking about that. We'll talk about it here on Current Sports. So let's get right to it, shall we? Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this March 7th, 2014. Okay, again, MSU in Iowa. Keith Appling scored in double figures for the first time in more than 5 weeks, folks, as number 22 Michigan State looked healthier than it had in months. An 86-76 victory over number 24 Iowa on Thursday night. Appling showed his old aggressiveness before hip and wrist injuries and scored 12 points for the Spartans. Impressive stuff by Keith Appling there. Roy Devon Marble, he's been great all year for the Hawkeyes. He scored 24 points, but number 24 Iowa couldn't stop an onslaught from Michigan State that looked strangely familiar earlier this season. Now, after the game, seniors Appling, Adrian Payne, and Dan Chapman were honored as they played their last games at the Breslin Center, the senior squad there. It's pretty funny, too. If you saw that game, Dan Chapman, they were trying to get him checked in as time was winding down, and Izzo, ordered. It was pretty funny because Izzo ordered Denzel Valentine to throw the ball out of bounds so that they could get Chapman in. It's a pretty funny moment, but Chapman, he got his time in the game, missed a three-pointer, and then, was called out of the game as he kissed the logo in the middle of the court. Gotta love that. Now, the Spartans wrap up the regular season on the road this Sunday, the final game of the regular season against Ohio State, and then it's Big Ten tourney time. Boy, March Madness is in live and full effect, folks. All right, and the MSU women, after clinching the outright Big Ten title, a share of the Big Ten title for the MSU women with a win against, for the women, a win this past weekend. They are in Indy now for the 2014 Big Ten tournament tonight. Now, the Spartans, who are the number two seed after tying Penn State at a 13-3 record for the regular season title, they will face Michigan, yes, Michigan, tonight at 6:30 p.m. in Bankers Life Fieldhouse on the Big Ten Network. Now, MSU advanced to the championship game last season, falling to Penn State in Chicago. And with the Michigan men, after clinching the outright Big Ten title with a blowout win over Illinois earlier this week, the Michigan Wolverines now look to make it five straight W's as they take on Indiana at home tomorrow. Tip-off is set for 6 p.m. at the Chrysler Center and can be seen on ESPN. The Detroit Pistons, they are also in action tonight and will try to pull themselves out of a funk when they visit Kevin Love and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Detroit has lost 5 of 6 and 8 of their last 10 to drop 3 games behind Atlanta, the Atlanta Hawks, for the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. Now, Minnesota has trended in the other direction, winning 3 in a row before losing to the Knicks at the Target Center. Tip-off is set for 8 p.m. tonight. All right, the Detroit Red Wings, they dropped another overtime contest last night, losing to the Colorado Avalanche 3-2 in the extra period. Andre Benoit, he netted the game winner and spoiled the retirement ceremony of Nicholas Lidstrom's number 5. Now, Lidstrom played his entire 20-season career in Detroit, setting an NHL record for most games played at 1,564. Most games played by someone who was on only one NHL team. Impressive stuff. The surefire Hall of Famer was the first European captain to win a Stanley Cup in 2008 and won a total of 4 cups in his time on the blue line. How about that? And later on, we'll be discussing Lidstrom's legacy and what he meant to the Detroit Red Wings and, where he goes down in hockey history. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on that, the number, 517-355-9527. And it was on and popping yesterday as the girls' high school basketball regional finals tipped off. Now, in a nail biter, the Grand Ledge Comets, they topped Hazlitt 36-32 in a Class A regional final game in Ann Arbor at Ann Arbor Huron High School. A really back and forth, gritty game. The Orwat sisters, they played great. A big block, I believe, by Hannah to seal the deal in that game. Grand Ledge now moves on. They have a district and regional title in their back pockets now. Gotta love that. And St. Louis, they topped Carson City Crystal yesterday, 42-32 in the Class C regional final at Ithaca High School. And Eden Rapids, they topped Ionia 34-25 in the Class B regional final Thursday night at Leslie High School. And Lansing Christian, they pulled out a 37-34 victory over Camden Frontier in a Class D regional final on Thursday at Morenci High School. Congrats to Grand Ledge, Eden Rapids, and Lansing Christian as they all keep their seasons alive in hopes of a state championship. Gotta love that. All right, the WGC Cadillac Championship at Doral has finally slogged through a slow, rain-delayed opening round. Now, 4 golfers managed to finish their rounds Thursday, while the rest of the field had to battle windy conditions when finishing this morning. Patrick Reed's 4-under-68 has him at the top of the leaderboard with big names like Jason Duffner, Rory McIlroy, and Luke Donald within 2 strokes. Tiger Woods, who received treatment for back pain earlier in the week, shot a 4-over 76 and is currently tied for 53rd. Oh my goodness, not a good outing for him. He actually took the tee this morning at 11:44. We'll keep you updated throughout the show on how he is performing. And sad news, especially concerning the world of baseball, such an influential figure here. Frank Jobe, who first performed the revolutionary operation that would later become known as Tommy John surgery, has passed away at the age of 88. Now, Jobe's operation involved transplanting an unneeded tendon from Tommy John's right wrist into his left elbow, where it functioned as a new ligament. Now, the procedure changed baseball forever and saved countless pitchers' careers, as an injury that would normally be career-threatening could now only cost a season. Tommy John went on to say in a statement after Jobe's death that, quote, "There are a lot of pitchers in baseball who should celebrate his life and what he did for the game of baseball." Oh, boy. Tough stuff there. All right. And a disturbing update concerning the former NFL safety, Darren Sharper. Now, Darren Sharper told witnesses that the sexual intercourse that he and a friend had with two women in New Orleans in September was not consensual. That's according to a report by a New Orleans police detective obtained by USA Today. Now, Sharper is currently jailed in Los Angeles, California, having surrendered last week to police after a warrant was issued in connection with the alleged rapes in New Orleans. An acquaintance of Sharper's, Eric Nunez, also is facing two charges of aggravated rape in the incident, which police in Louisiana said occurred at an apartment on September 23rd of 2013. Nunez was booked on two accounts of rape Friday morning in New Orleans. Now, the report states that the two alleged victims were under the influence of an unknown substance and, quote, do not recall the entirety of the sexual intercourse. Now, both victims say they awoke from the apartment to find Sharper on top of them, completely nude. Disturbing stuff. And both denied consenting to the sexual intercourse. All right, folks. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in, share your thoughts on any of them, 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. And share anything that's on your mind. You can also, of course, go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. And, of course, later on in the hour, we're going to be discussing MSU in Iowa as the Michigan State men's basketball team. They do senior night in style, getting a big win over Iowa. Looks as though they're back on track, but this has been a roller coaster of a season. We'll discuss it. Ed and I will discuss that, and we'll be taking your calls on that, as well as the MSU and Michigan women's basketball game tonight in the Big Ten tournament. We'll give you a game preview of that, discuss Nicholas Lidstrom's legacy, talk Isaiah Thomas to the Pistons, so much more. You know the number, 517-355-9527. In the meantime, before we get to your calls and discuss all of that, if you missed Current Sports TV last night, you're in luck. I sat down with Joey Eisenman, who is one of the co-managers over at SNAP, which is the Spartan Nutrition and Performance Program that deals with youth athletes and gives them a workout regimen that deals with how they should eat and also, you know, going into gym and different workouts, variances in workouts to try and get them better in whatever sport they play. I mean, Joey has worked with, you know, athletes from 6 years old all the way up. A pretty, pretty cool program right here in East Lansing, Michigan. I sat down with Joey to dive into the program and so much more, and I first asked him, what are the first steps to making sure that a youth athlete is performing at his or her highest level?
From a growth perspective or maturation perspective, it's really controlled by genetics, hormones, and proper nutrition. There's other factors that influence it as well, including physical activity and exercise training. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for the kids that come into our training center and they're interested in sports performance and we're trying to help them improve their athletic ability and sport performance, making sure that they're getting an adequate training load and monitoring that, not only what we do at our center, but what's going on outside of our training center, because they're going to practices, so on and so forth as well. So making sure that that training load is not getting too much, and proper recovery goes along with that as well. Mm-hmm. So that's a real key as well.
You know, Joey, I got to ask you, you know, I cover a lot of high school sports, and I'm at a lot of high school games, specifically when I talk about football. You know, when I go to a football game, you know, sometimes I look on the sidelines, and I kind of reminisce to when I was in high school, and I will see maybe a wide receiver who looks like he could be in college right now. It's unbelievable to see the kind of development and growth over the years when it comes to youth sports. Have you seen a general trend that kids are becoming bigger, faster, and stronger over time?
So, yeah, it's been documented now in the literature, not so much at the high school ages, but we know for college athletics and professional. And there's that trickle-down effect, there's no doubt. And you can look at roster data from now back until the 80s, the 60s, or whatever it is, and it's pretty clear that, you know, youth are... young athletes are a little bit taller, a little bit heavier, and you know, part of that is probably related to the training that goes on as well. There's a lot more emphasis now on the physical training, particularly resistance exercise training, which can enhance, you know, body composition, muscle growth in adolescents, especially boys.
Right, right. And, you know, is that also going to be genetically as well? Have we seen genetic natural advancement over time?
Yeah, probably not there. I mean,
okay.
Changes in...
It's a myth then.
Yeah, changes in the human genome take several generations, several hundred years, thousands of years. So
it certainly skipped me. I tell you that. Well, I tell you what, Joey. Before we took the air today, you told me that you're about to actually go to Portugal, right? Tell the people why, because I think this is a pretty cool, pretty cool endeavor.
Yeah. So I have an affiliation with the University of Porto, and I go once a year. I teach a mini course related to child growth and maturation, related to both health. And disease, particularly childhood obesity and metabolic syndrome, but also to sport performance. So I'm going to teach that short course, but I'm also going to collaborate on a project that I'm involved in that is looking at young soccer players who are associated with the English Premier League academies. So every English Premier League team, Chelsea, Man U, so on and so forth,
right.
They have an academy where they have 9 to 15-year-olds in that academy. And we're about to embark on a 3-year longitudinal study to track basically everything from head to toe of these kids, looking at physical dimensions, physiological aspects, psychosocial parameters, the whole gamut.
Wow. So how do you go about conducting that research? I mean, do you put them in a room and do just measurements on every body part and all that kind of stuff? Kind of like
it's kind of like
from a sci-fi movie,
yeah.
Right?
Well, it's actually a lot like the NFL Combine.
Wow. So
all of these academies are very well invested in preparing these youngsters to get to their team. This is a financial investment for them.
Yeah.
So they want to make sure that they have the right kids, and these kids are developing appropriately, both with skill development, with physical training, with mental skill development, with nutrition. So yeah, we will spend numerous days measuring them on a variety of facets, you know, medical examinations, nutrition, surveys, physiological testing.
Wow.
it's quite extensive.
Boy, they take their soccer serious over there, I tell you.
Yeah.
Now, you know, talking about your facility here in Lansing, East Lansing, I got to ask you, the Spartan Nutrition and Performance Program, how was it started? I believe July 2012 is when it was started, right, Joey?
So July 2012 is when I came on board. Mm-hmm. The Spartan Nutrition and Performance Program, or what a lot of people refer to as SNAP, was originated in 2005 when my colleague and co-director, Dr. Joe Carlson, came to Michigan State University and basically was charged with initiating a sports nutrition program for MSU athletics.
Mm-hmm.
So we still do that to this day. We oversee all sports nutrition services for all 700-plus athletes at Michigan State University. But yes, in July 2012, I came on board, and I have a vision of a integrated sports medicine, sports performance program. We're just getting going right now. Things are going very well. We're located in the I Building, just off of campus. MSU Sports Medicine is across the hall from us. Mm-hmm. We are co-located with MSU Rehabilitation Medicine, and then our training facility is right there on the same floor as Sports Med and Rehab Med. So it's a really unique environment for both faculty and staff, but also for the athletes to know that you're surrounded by MSU Sport Meds, the same docs that deal with the MSU athletes, MSU Rehabilitation, and then our crew. You know, number one, we do sports nutrition for the MSU athletes, but also, you know, with my training in pediatric exercise physiology, these young athletes, we feel are treated just like a Division I athlete.
Wow, gotta love that. Now, when you talk about your research and, you know, the things that you work on with these youth, you know, in your program, what type of results have you seen with these athletes?
Sure. Well, you know, first of all, we have a wide range of services that we provide, and I basically tell people that we can do anything under the sun related to testing, training, or energizing young athletes. Mm-hmm. But our marquee program is right there at our clinical facility. It's a speed and athletic enhancement program where the athletes come in and they undergo speed development training with a high-speed treadmill. They go through plyometric exercise, agility exercises, lower body strength and power, core, upper body, and they always get nutrition and mental skills every training session.
Mental skills?
Yeah.
What sort of mental skills? That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, it's basically sports psychology. So goal setting, monitoring your goals, positive self-talk, relaxation under pressure, visualization, all these key mental skills that elite athletes themselves engage in to prepare themselves for sport and to succeed in sport.
And how do you go about testing those things?
So those are a little bit more difficult to test. Those are basically tested by paper pencil. So the other things, you know, more hard outcomes that we have and the things that the kids are really interested in is they want to get faster, they want to get stronger.
Right.
So we do a speed test on our high-speed treadmill. Our average results are the kids get 1 mile an hour faster in 1 month's time.
Really?
That equates to, in the 20-yard dash, about 0.2 seconds, which is not real trivial. That's at least a step and a half.
Okay, gotcha. It's still faster. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. For foot quickness and agility, they get an average improvement of 25%. Lower body strength and power improvements are about 33% as well. So we see some real nice gains in our program.
Wow, maybe I need to enlist in it. I'm trying to get buff myself. Yeah. All right, that's another subject. That's another subject, Joey. Now, really quickly, before we go to our 12th man on Facebook and Twitter, Joey, I want to ask you, I mean, for just in general, people watching this episode out there trying to just live a healthier lifestyle, what tips would you give them to start off with?
I mean, you just have to do the right things, right? Sometimes it's easier said than done, but, you know, getting adequate sleep, number one, having a prudent diet, getting physical activity across the day. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously as adults, we always think of going to the gym and putting on our gym shorts and running on the treadmill, but, you know, you got to be able to do it across the day as well. That might be biking to work or parking your car a little bit further in the parking lot, taking the stairs. And along with that is breaks in sedentary behavior. I mean, we sit in front of a screen a lot during the day. Most of us do, right?
Right, right.
So even taking a 5-minute break every hour and just walking down the hallway, walking around the building, refreshing your memory, and you're going to be more productive at work as well that way.
Yeah.
And then, you know, getting adequate, you know, stress management is important.
That's
and
important, too.
And having a positive outlook on life.
Gotta love that. All right, Joey, you got a few more seconds.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
All right, let's do it. Joey, stick around because the 12th man starts right now. All right, well, Joey, it's time for the 12th man. And on the 12th man today, we are going to head to our Facebook and Twitter pages at facebook.com/currentsports and also Twitter, my Twitter page, Al Martin, WKAR. First question for you, Joey, you ready?
Ready.
All right, this comes from Facebook. Andrea wants to know, what do people need to know before starting supplements or taking creatine powder?
That's a great question. What they need to know is it's unregulated. The Federal Drug and Drug Administration does not regulate ergogenic aids or supplements, so you don't know what's in it. There's a lot of supplements that are tainted that may have amphetamines in or traces of steroids in, so it can be very dangerous.
Really? So creatine, what advice would you, because I was, you know, doing some research on creatine too, which is I believe a muscle builder supplement, right?
Well, it's purported to be a muscle building substance. It really deals more with metabolic pathways and has gotten a lot of press. It, you know, supplements come and go and there's always a hot supplement. There's a supplement of the week or whatever, right?
Right.
And the research data on creatine has shown, you know, some positive effects of it for improvement in short-term high-intensity bout activities, which can be related to, you know, changes in muscle strength as well. But still, you know, buyer beware.
Gotcha. Buyer beware. I like that one. Okay. Thanks so much, Andrew. Appreciate it. Okay. Marlene from Port Huron wants to know, Joey, how early do you start working with kids? What's the youngest age you've worked with at SNAP?
So in general, we try to stick to ages 10 to 18, and there's no magic number in the age of 10. We do have a few 9-year-olds. We have some 10-year-olds in our program. Mm-hmm. A lot of it deals with readiness as well. Being cognitively ready and being physically ready. We're actually ready to embark on a new camp. So besides our clinic, we do camps as well. In the past, we've run these on Sunday evenings. We ran our speed and athletic enhancement camp for 10 to 18-year-olds. But we're going to start one that we're going to be calling Fundamentals of Athletic Movement for 6 to 9-year-olds.
Fundamentals.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that. Thanks a lot, Marlene, for your question. Nick from Lansing wants to know, Joey, what sport typically produces athletes who need the most help from the folks at SNAP? What about the least? So the most help and the least help. It's a tough one.
I don't know if I can answer that question because the athletes who come to us come from a variety of sports, and it's not a matter of an athlete needing more help or less help. It depends on the individual athlete. Mm-hmm. So one thing that we do is we get to know the individual athlete before they even step foot in our facility. When they register with us and they register online, we have a pretty extensive athlete monitoring system that sends out an email to them. It takes them to a link where they first fill out a detailed medical history. And then when they come into our facility, they fill out a nutrition survey and a mental skills survey. And then the first session that they partake in is a testing session. So we get all kinds of metrics on them.
So it varies.
Yeah. So,
wide range.
Yeah. So to answer the question, it's really difficult because it all depends on the individual athlete and what kind of needs that athlete has.
There you have that. Joey Eisenman, he is one of the co-founders of SNAP, the Spartan Nutrition and Performance Program right here in East Lansing, which is dedicated towards making sure that youth around the area who are involved in sports receive the proper nutrition and advanced training to become better in their preferred sport. Gotta love that. What a program it is. Again, that's right located right here in East Lansing, and Joey actually extended an invitation to me to go out there and go through their rigorous training regimen that lasts about, I believe, 30 to 45 minutes. We're definitely going to do that and have that as one of our current sports features, current sports TV later on in the week. So definitely look forward to that one. Thanks a lot, Joy, for joining me. All right, again, we're taking your calls throughout this entire hour. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. When we come back, we are going to talk some MSU men's basketball as they got a big win at home, final game of the regular season, big win over Iowa. Is MSU back on track? We'll talk about it. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports will be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Okay, well, it's time to talk a little MSU men's basketball. The MSU men's basketball team, they get back on track, snapping a 2-game losing streak with an 86 to 76 victory over Iowa last night. Last night was also senior night for Garkeith Appling, Ford Adrian Payne, and Dan Chapman. Even Dan Chapman got to get a little love. Got to love that. All right, well, Matt Luckey now joins me to dive into this game. Matt, a really solid win for this MSU men's basketball team. We saw the emergence of Keith Appling, who scored for the first time in double figures in more than 5 weeks. We haven't seen that in 5 weeks. Keith Appling looks like the, you know, he looked better. He looked like, you know, like he did in January, to be honest with you. I mean, he seemed to be back into a rhythm. Really meshed with the team very well. I've been waiting for that Keith for a long time. I'm sure many people have. It seemed as though in that defense, if there's anything I'm worried about, that defense in the first half looked a bit porous. Michigan State, I mean, don't get me wrong, Roy Devin Marble, I mean, he made some tough shots. Roy Devin Marble, he's ready for the NBA right now. I mean, he was very impressive yesterday. But overall, it seemed as though it was a complete contrast from MSU's defensive energy from that first half to the second half, where MSU really got after it in that second half. They also, this is something that's pretty alarming that's been happening these past few games. They had 16 turnovers. Now, I don't know. We haven't seen, you know, the turnovers really be an alarming factor most of the year, but we have seen it lately. I'm hoping that doesn't really spiral out of control for this team. But really, a really impressive outing for this team considering where they were these past two games. 20 assists on 28 baskets, and they just shot the blood out the ball from three-point land. They were really, really efficient from behind the arc. 10 for 17 from three-point land. Denzel Valentine, he was great. 13 points, 9 assists, 5 rebounds. I'm looking for Denzel. He has been very, very – I mean, Denzel seems to just get better and better as the season goes on. I remember in the middle of the season, I'm sitting there, you either get a – and this is still true. I still think this is true. You either get a really, really bad Denzel or a pretty good Denzel. I think yesterday he wasn't pretty good. He was great yesterday. Flirting with the triple-double there. Travis Trice, he was also great. He had 17 points, 4 of 5, 6 for 6 from the free throw stripe. Impressive outing for MSU to try to get back on track and ride some momentum into that tourney, huh?
Absolutely, and I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Exactly.
But it seemed like Keith Appling and the team as a whole might have turned a corner last night.
Mm-hmm.
When he hit that three and the building just erupted, the entire team just sort of fed off of that confidence. They fed off the energy, and they blew Iowa out. I mean, I don't know how many times the last few weeks – we've seen MSU just fade down the stretch in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll be in a tight game, and then there's a five-minute period late in the second half where they can't buy a bucket.
Right.
And they fall out, and they lose. This game was the complete opposite. They took control in the second half and asserted themselves and really, really played well, and I think Travis Trice was the key to that. Appling hit the shot. He picked up a cheap foul. Trice came in and just lit it up.
Yeah,
I mean,
Trice is unbelievable.
He still had the two bad turnovers. He makes when he makes turnovers, it's a lot like Valentine, where they are loud. I mean, they are, you know, your eyes pop when you see them because they are that obvious. But you know, when you don't miss,
right? That's the thing.
It's tough to argue. He was hitting everything, and then the McCabe slam later. I'm sure we'll get to that.
Oh yeah, we'll definitely talk about that in just a sec. But yeah, Travis Trice is really, really great. I mean. Anytime, and it's so comforting for a guy like Keith Appling, he's the engine behind this team. He's the quarterback of this team, who, if he is having a bad game, and you got to give a lot of credit to Trice, because there's been numerous times where Keith Appling hasn't seemed to be on his game, and then Trice will come in and just orchestrate and facilitate, you know, the offense so well, and it seems to run very smoothly through him. That's a very, very a catch-22 guard, if you will, who can come in and really handle things when he's out. Trice, hats off to him, 17 points for him. Even Brandon Dawson had a great game as well. I mean, Brandon Dawson has looked good since he's come back from his hand injury. He had 8 points, 7 rebounds, 5 steals, and 3 blocks. I mean, Brandon Dawson was everywhere. I mean, and he's one of those X factors that MSU was really, really needing down the stretch of this season when we have these question marks. Brandon Dawson always said he's a garbage man. He's the guy who's gonna go in there and get those gritty plays, the 50-50 type rebounds, add another body down there who is freakishly athletic, who has those long arms, who can block shots. I mean, Dawson is a presence down there, especially on the defensive end. Again, 5 steals for Brandon. That's crazy.
It is crazy, and you know, those are the things that they did miss when he was out. You know, they missed those dirty stats, you know,
right.
the tough rebounds, the blocks. I mean, just guarding guys. I mean, Aaron White didn't score until the second half.
And, exactly.
And he was largely a non-factor. For a while, it was just Roy Devon Marble, and that was it.
Right.
And Roy Devon Marble is a tremendous player.
He's
I don't know why they didn't just give him the ball every play
just
and
say,
just say,
get
hey,
out the way.
Drive, because nobody's going to stop the spin move layup.
Yeah.
Nobody could stop it all night.
Right.
Nobody can stop it now. I think going forward, teams are going to struggle containing him because that kid can play.
Yeah.
But, you know, the biggest thing to me, you mentioned it earlier as far as a red flag could go. This team has a tendency, and I'm speaking of MSU, they have a tendency to when they make plays, they get a little bit impressed with themselves. I don't know how many times in the first half they would make a semi-spectacular play on the offensive end, fall asleep, get beat down the court, and give up a three or a layup or an easy shot to Iowa.
Yeah, they get too lax.
They make a great play, and then they take three off. And that's the kind of effort that I think is going to come with more consistency playing together, but it has to be a little bit more urgent on the defensive end, especially in that first half.
Yeah,
it's
I agree.
Alarming.
Yeah, that first half, I'm sitting there like, whoa. I mean, I had flashbacks to that Michigan game where, I mean, the defense just was not there, and Iowa just seemed to just get – MSU and Iowa were trading buckets back and forth through a lot of that first half, which made it a back-and-forth game. And that second half, though, I mean, it just seemed to the energy that MSU had in that second half right out the gates was very, very – it was such a contrast from that first half. And they made it happen, man. It was very, very impressive in that second half that they can duplicate that. And that's the question looking forward now. I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid. It's a great win. Don't get me wrong. After two tough losses, and now you get a game like this, a big win like this over a very, very good Iowa team. At home, senior night, emotions are running. It's a great win confidence-wise for this team. The question will be now, can they duplicate it, and now can they be consistent with this effort and with this formality of play that they had against Iowa? I mean, that's what I'm going to be harping on, because right now one game is great, but you still got to end the season off onto a positive note now where you go into Ohio State, and you got to stop Aaron Kraft and company. And we remember the last time, you know, the game at the Breslin Center between Michigan State and Ohio State, that was a historic game. But, I mean, you got to finish the season off with a good note. This is a great step toward that, but you got to finish off Ohio State if you want to really ride some momentum into the Big Ten tournament.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one thing to shoot well against Iowa, and it seems like everybody is shooting well against Iowa because, quite frankly, Iowa cannot play defense.
Right, exactly.
It's a entirely different ball game against Ohio State. I think it's going to be another – I think it's actually perfect how it sets up.
Right.
If you're looking at MSU from the perspective of let's just get to the tournament, because now they're playing a team, you know, they go from playing a team who is completely focused on the offensive end and maybe lacks a little defensively to the reversal of that with a team that is dominant defensively and struggles offensively. So they're kind of getting two different looks at two different styles of team before tournament time.
Yeah, which
and I
is
think
great.
That'll be good for them ultimately. It's going to be interesting to see if they can kind of duplicate the offensive performance against Ohio State. Because they're not going to shoot 58% from three-point land. They're not going to shoot 58% from the floor. I mean, they were on fire last night.
Yes, they were. I mean, just really, really hot. And that's the thing. I mean, when MSU has it going from behind the arc and their shot is just flowing, I mean, they're going to take a lot of them, and a lot of them were going down. And that's the thing. When we've seen MSU not hit those shots, when they do, when their jump shot is not connecting, it seems as though they just get into a habit of just, all right, well, we're just going to keep shooting until we start making them. No, I mean, that mentality has to go out, and you have to start attacking the paint. We'll see what happens as the season goes on when they do face situations like that. But great game, though. I mean, great game for Michigan State. Now we can go back to the tri-slam. That really was a moment I looked at, and I'm just sitting there like, really, dude? I mean, and it seemed like what was the player's name that did slam? I forget.
McCabe?
Yeah, McCabe. McCabe slams him. And, you know, Travis Trice is putting his arms up in the air. And McCabe, like, turned his shoulder, and he even kicked up his foot. It was like a judo move. I had a flashback from when I took judo in college. I'm like, hey, I remember that move. They taught me that on my second day. Crazy stuff there. I believe they did. I mean, they threw Russell Bird out the game for leaving the bench.
Right.
But they didn't throw McCabe out the game.
Because it was a double foul.
Yeah, yeah. I don't understand that.
I have no idea how you could possibly rule it that way.
Exactly.
Especially after they go to the monitors and look at it for like 5 minutes.
It was clear intent there to slam Trice on the ground. He should have been ejected from the game immediately. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. I couldn't believe it.
I couldn't believe it either. And I think the funniest part was right when they showed the, like, on one of the first replays, they look at Trice after it, and he gets up, and I think he was talking to Valentine, and you can read his lips clear as day, and he says, "I told you that guy was dirty, man. I told you that
guy
was dirty."
Oh, that's what he said. I didn't see that.
That's exactly what he said. And it was just like, oh, brother. And to have the big fallout from that being Russell Bird getting ejected.
I know, right? Exactly.
It's just, like that poor guy cannot catch a break.
And he was on the bench and got, it's not like Russell Bird was in the game. The funny thing about that moment, I mean, getting ejected on the bench is like getting fired on your day off. I mean, dude, I mean, you're sitting on the bench. What are you doing? Oh, gosh, Russell Bird's hilarious. That Birdman is hilarious to me. But, yeah, I just couldn't believe how he didn't throw him out the game. That's one thing. I mean, it's clear intent. He clearly threw him down.
Has nothing to do with basketball.
Nothing to do with basketball at all. And he still – I don't get that one. NCAA, I think they dropped the ball on that one. But.
Yeah, and one more note about the game.
Yeah.
In terms of MSU's effort, a good sign for me is when you look at the box score and you look at the shot distribution.
Yeah.
Adrian Payne was 5 of 12, and I actually thought he might have struggled more than anybody. He was forcing it a little bit. You could tell he knew it was senior night.
And he wanted to go out
with a bang. Right. And he was forcing it a little bit. But other than that, nobody shot the ball more than 10 times. Gary Harris, 5 for 8.
Right.
I mean,
That's impressive.
That's perfect.
Because we've seen Gary, I mean, if just jack it up left and right. And
exactly.
And the offensive relies so heavily on him sometimes that, I mean, he does just jack it up like that. But, yeah, that's a good thing to point out.
And
yeah.
maybe that's just a product of Keith Appling being more confident in his shot because he took 7 shots too, so it's not those box scores with Appling where he's 1 of 3 and then other guys have to pick it up. I think when you have to guard everyone on Michigan State, that's a tall task.
Very tall task when everybody's engaged. Yeah.
This looks like the team that was number 2 in the preseason.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And you talk about the distribution. I mean, you got 4 guys in double figures, you know, out of the starters, 4 of the 5 starters in double figures. And the only one who didn't hit double figures was Brandon Dawson, but he did it on the defensive end. I mean, it's a perfect balance for that team last night. And, you know, again, a great, great win now going into Ohio State. Have we predicted the Ohio State game yet? I don't know if we have anything.
We have. We both took Michigan State, but we didn't pick the score.
We didn't pick the score. Okay. We were both. We chose Michigan State by 2 or 3. Both of us did. So we didn't get the spread on that one. But I'm going with Michigan State in this one by 10 this time against Ohio State.
Michigan State by 10. State I'm going to take 10. MSU by 6.
By 6. Gotcha. All right. Well, there we have it, man. All right, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll talk a little MSU women's basketball as they get ready for the Big Ten tournament tonight against rival Michigan. How about that? We'll also talk about Nicholas Lidstrom's legacy and Isaiah Thomas possibly going to the Pistons. All right. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, alongside Matt Luckey. Matt, you just shared some pretty cool news with me concerning Gary Harris and Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, it's the annual NCAA tournament preview edition, I'm assuming, of Sports Illustrated. They do the regional covers, and it looks like Gary's going to get one of those.
Wow, that is pretty cool stuff.
I mean, that's... That's a collectible.
Is going to be on the cover,
my friend
right?
is going to be one of the kids in the crowd in the background, I believe. So
wow.
So he's going to have a nice framed poster, and like I told him, you know, in a text message, he finally has an icebreaker for when he meets Kate Upton.
There you go. Like I was on the cover.
I was on the cover of Sports Illustrated too.
Check this out, baby.
Perfect.
And then boom, he's right there.
He's in.
That's pretty cool stuff, man. How about that? All right. Well, Matt. Also tonight, the Michigan State women's basketball team, of course, who clinched a share of the Big Ten title. They are Big Ten champs. You know, with the win this past weekend, they get ready now for the Big Ten tournament, playing their rival Michigan tonight in Indianapolis, Indiana. Should be a pretty good game. Now, Matt, the first time these two met, in the one lone meeting of the regular season for these two, Michigan State pulled out a 79-72 win. And Michigan State, I mean, when you talk about the rivalry between Michigan and Michigan State, when it comes to women's basketball, there really is no rival when you talk about this matchup. Michigan State has won 22 of the last 24 games against Michigan. Just complete dominance. Not even close, man. MSU scored 51 points actually in the second half in that during that first game, and they shot 50 and unconscious, 58% from the field to top Michigan. Pickrell, Mills, and Ariel Powers, they all three were big, and a really big factor that MSU will be missing in this game, Matt, is Kiana Johnson, because Kiana Johnson was so big in that first game when Michigan State pulled out that 79-72 win. She had 14 points, 12 alone in the first, in the second half, excuse me, to go along with 4 assists and 2 steals. Of course, Johnson has been suspended for the remainder of the season. She has missed about maybe 5 or 6 games, I want to say. And U of M, they're coming off a win over Indiana, a convincing win over Indiana yesterday, 82-57, the final of that one. And I'm really looking, I'm honing in. When you talk about matchups here, U of M's, that first game, Saisha Gorey, she was unbelievable. She was unbelievable that first game. Was really, really big that last meeting. She's a 6'3 forward who gave Pickrell and Mills hell down low. So we'll see. I still think Michigan State, I mean, they're the Big Ten champs. I mean, again, that first meeting was around, you know, middle to late, really the middle of the season, right in the chunk of the season when this team was still trying to figure itself out. And this Michigan State team, though, is totally different from the first time they met. I still think Michigan State pulls this one out. I don't think it will be a blowout, though. I still think it will be a close one, though.
I think it will be a close one, too. And you mentioned that they're going to miss Kiana Johnson. At the same time, it's not on the road in Ann Arbor. And I know, right. You know, maybe Chrysler Center isn't as intimidating in women's basketball as it might be in men's.
Right.
But I still think a neutral floor helps out, you know, the team that was on the road. It is a shame that they only play once.
I know, right? I couldn't believe that, man.
I don't like
one time.
That always bugs me when they only play once. So it's good that they're playing again. I think Michigan State's just a better team. And even though they have, you know, been missing Kiana Johnson, I mean, in terms of their performances,
overall,
they haven't missed a beat.
Exactly.
I mean, they're rolling.
They've gotten better, to be honest with you. And, you know, I really look forward to seeing Ariel Powers tonight. Ariel Powers, to me, she's my favorite player on the team as far as just on-court play goes. She is she's an assassin out there, dude. And it's so crazy because you see her out there. She's so fiery. She's getting in the face of her teammates. And this is a freshman we're talking about. She plays like she's a senior. And then you go into interview, you know, the post-game press conference. She's just the sweetest person you could ever meet. I always tease her about that. She is so sweet, man, but she is a pit bull when she's out there on the court. But, yeah, I don't know if we chose the winner of this game, but we'll do it right now because we didn't know what the matchup was going to be in this one. So I'm going with Michigan State by 6 in this one.
All right, I'm going to take MSU by 8. Over Michigan, and we did pick that MSU would make the finals of the Big Ten tournament.
Yes, we did.
So we're already, you know, kind of committed to Michigan State in this game.
And, Matt, who did you choose in the finals of that?
I chose Penn State. You chose Iowa.
Well, I got some news for you, man. 8th-seeded Buckeye women are beating top-seeded Penn State as we speak. 75-50 with 12 minutes to go. Oh,
wow.
Man. Yeah.
Somebody's laying an egg, and I think it's the Nittany Lions.
Yeah, without a doubt.
That's okay, though,
right,
because
now,
if Michigan State makes it, then, you know, I feel safer with my pick as, you know, for them to be the champs.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, if they go all the way, then yeah.
Right.
So we both had MSU, I think, going all the way.
We did.
So there you go. That's surprising.
That is surprising.
You're talking about the 8th seed at Ohio State Buckeyes?
That's the thing about conference tournaments, though. You never know.
You never know,
If a team has one bad game, and sometimes it helps to play that day before because you get into the rhythm. I feel like they always talk about, oh, well, this team's going to be tired because they've had to play so many games in so many days.
Right, right.
I don't know if I buy that so much.
I don't buy that because, I mean,
these are college kids.
These are college kids. I mean, that rhythm sometimes, that momentum can carry over, especially if you're coming off a great game, you know, riding into the second game, if it's a back-to-back. Like tonight, I mean, Michigan had a very convincing win over Indiana last night. Now they roll in tonight playing Michigan State, who hasn't played in quite a long time now. I mean, it's a catch-22 with any of that either. I mean, so we'll see.
I agree. I think the only time it catches up would be in the finals, when those legs start to get tired and maybe you start, you know, shorting jumpers.
Yeah, when you get deeper into the postseason. I definitely agree with that. But, man, wow, Penn, that's crazy.
That is
crazy.
Wow,
okay. All right, well, also, last night, let's talk some Red Wing action really quick. And it's about 10 minutes left. Just the legacy of Nicholas Lidstrom. I mean, I watched a little bit of the ceremony yesterday. What a moment for one of the greatest hockey players of all time, one of the top 3 defensemen ever. You know, and when you talk about Nicholas Lidstrom, I mean, Hockey Town, just that whole, you go back to that era back in the 90s, you know, we talk about Steve Yzerman and all that. I mean, Nicholas Lidstrom was, I mean, and I don't watch a lot of hockey, but I knew who Nicholas Lidstrom was in the 90s, okay, when I was a 90s kid, you know, in Detroit. I mean, people would talk about Nicholas Lidstrom, and he just seems like just the classiest guy. It was a great ceremony to see him, you know, a sure Hall of Famer, just to see him in, embraced by the city of Detroit last night. It was pretty cool.
Yeah,
pretty
I think cool the only downside is that he's already retired.
Yeah,
Nick,
I know, right?
Lace him up.
Yeah, lace
they
him up, baby.
You. I mean, they need you. No, but
he's been retired for what, 2 years now?
Yeah,
I think?
And you know, he's obviously moving on to different things in his life, and more right. power to him. But
right.
that I feel like he's one of those guys that you could see playing until he's 55. Like, he was just yeah. so good at being in the right spot. He was such a smart player that even when he was starting to decline physically, he was still one of the top defensemen in the NHL just because he was so smart. He knew where to go. He knew how to run a team.
Right.
One of the greatest power play, you know, point men I'll ever remember. I mean, for me, he was like, you know, the Red Wings version of Jason Hansen.
Yeah,
where
yeah,
you just,
yeah.
Where you just never thought he wouldn't be there.
Right.
And now that
right.
he's gone, it's like, it's just this gaping hole that they, yeah. I mean, they're still looking for that, you know, heir apparent to be the guy. I mean, I know Cronwall is a great player, but Nick Lidstrom was...
Man, he's
a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he's a Hall, sure.
First ballot.
Oh yeah, without he's a shoe-in right now. And you know, and you talk about those accounts from different players who played with him, and they always say, I mean, he was just at the right place at the right time. And they always say, yeah, I mean, he was just so smart, you know. And Stevie Y had an interesting quote about Nick, and he said, quote, "He's Roger Federer. He's graceful, so technically sound. It's effortless to him." And, you know, I think that is a great quote that kind of sums up, I mean, just Nicholas Lidstrom on the ice. I mean, just a savvy player. He's one of now 7 Red Wings to have their numbers retired at the Joe. How about only 7? Unbelievable there. I mean, that blew my mind. I thought it were more than 7, but, man, to be one of those, and, I mean, this is Hockey Town.
Right.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, this is arguably, well, I guess the Canadians and maybe the Maple Leafs have us, but mm-hmm. one of the most celebrated franchises in hockey.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And, you know, and you look at, like, in basketball, the Celtics, where it's like guys right. can't even pick numbers because all of them are retired.
Exactly.
So you only have 7 guys earn that, you know, that accomplishment. It's saying something.
It shows that they're not just giving out retired numbers to anybody.
Exactly. Exactly. You know? You know, you don't just come here for a few years and get your number retired because you right. win a title.
You got to earn
you
that,
baby.
You
have to earn it, and he absolutely did. He deserves yeah. it 110%.
Yeah.
It stinks that you don't get to see him play anymore, but boy, yeah. oh boy, that guy. He was special. He was so consistent.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing about him, yeah.
Just this calming force on the Red Wing blue line for 2 decades.
Always at the right place at the right time. He played a 20-year NHL career, 4 Stanley Cups, 1,325 points, and 7 Norris trophies, which goes to the NHL's top defenseman. Gotta love that. Cats off to Nicholas Lidstrom, man. It was a really, really well done and well thought out ceremony last night, too. Okay, Matt, well, we've been trying to get to this one all week.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my goodness. We've just had packed shows all week. But really quickly, it's been rumored left and right, and I couldn't believe it when I heard it. I actually got a CBS. I don't know if you have the CBS Sports app, but I have the CBS Sports app. And right before I took the air on Current Sports TV Wednesday, an update came and flashed on my phone that said that the Pistons are considering letting go of Joe Dumars.
Oh.
And I almost mentioned it when I went on Current Sports TV, but I didn't, which was smart, because after I went off air, I see nothing else. I mean, I think somebody just jumped the gun at CBS Sports and wanted, CBS Sports wants him fired, I guess, too, because they jumped the gun on that update. But with all of this, you know, the hoopla around Detroit, you know, the Detroit Pistons and what they're going through in this franchise, just down in the dumps right now, Isaiah Thomas's name has been brought up to possibly in the mix of a possible GM switch from Dumars to Isaiah Thomas. When I heard it, I scratched my head and said, why would you ever consider Isaiah Thomas to take over for Joe D? Looking at Isaiah Thomas's record, when you look at his resume, when you talk about franchises that he has tried to take over and even head coaching jobs, it is one of the worst you will ever find. And I just don't get it. I don't believe it. I don't think it'll ever happen. The rumors are out there. I mean, we've seen guys like Vince Ellis, who's a beat writer for the Detroit Pistons. Drew Sharp had an article on it earlier this week. It's not going to happen. I don't think Isaiah Thomas would ever come here. If it does happen, I would just scratch my head again and saying, what in the world are the Detroit Pistons doing? Joe D has got to go, though. I've said that. I don't think Joe D, I mean, his days are numbered here in Detroit. And right now, I mean, the Pistons are in desperation mode right now. I mean, it's like, you know, they and when you look at the roster, it's like they I look at the roster doesn't look too bad, especially playing in a battered Eastern Conference that is this year. And it just looks as though the leadership for this team from the coaching standpoint, from players, because I don't think there's one clear leader on this Pistons team at all as far as players go. And even from the GM position, Joe Dumars has just been laying eggs left and right. He's got fat and happy once, you know, they won a championship in 04. It's really puzzling. But I think Joe D must go. Isaiah Thomas is not the guy, though. I mean, dude, come on. No, let's put that to bed.
That would be insanity if they hired Isaiah Thomas. Nothing he has done since his playing days really qualifies him for that job.
Right.
I mean, everywhere he's been, it's ended in turmoil. I mean, all you have to do is look at his tenure with the Knicks. And I know the Knicks are obviously dysfunctional. I mean, look at them right now. They're probably in a worse spot than the Pistons are. But he's clearly not fit to be a GM. I think if you're going to hire somebody, don't just look at former players.
I was just about to say that. Stop going after the former player trend. Sometimes it works. I mean, there's very few out there. I mean, like a Kevin McHale, a Larry Bird. But those are – it doesn't
few
work
few and far
out.
Between.
Exactly.
And it just seems like, you know, they've got to do something, and I feel like they've got to do it quicker rather than later. Because when you have a talented kid like Andre Drummond,
right,
you don't want to have him spend his formative NBA years on a bad franchise where he's going to develop bad habits, and those are not going to be correctable down the line. You need to get somebody in there right now who knows exactly what he's doing, knows the direction he wants to take the franchise, and can actually get them there.
Right.
I think Tom Gore's the owner, clearly looking to shake things up.
Oh, without, he's frustrated. Tom
especially
Gore is
after
frustrated.
You know, you make last season or last off season's big splashes with Josh Smith and Brandon Jennings. Neither of them work out.
And you mentioned had a stat about Smith yesterday after the show. You mentioned that I believe a stat was brought up on, was it ESPN?
I was reading an article on Grantland about Philadelphia rookie Michael Carter Williams.
Yeah, Michael Carter Williams. Yeah,
and how much he struggled shooting the ball. He shoots 27% from three-point land.
Terrible.
He is ranked 103rd out of 104 NBA players who have attempted at least 150 three-pointers in terms of percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And in the corner, a little asterisk, Josh Smith is ranked 104.
Josh Smith is the worst three-point shooter
in the
entire league, in the NBA. It's just an overall frustrating team to watch every time the Pistons come on. And it hurts for me because I'm the biggest Pistons fan you ever meet in your life, and to constantly have to watch just garbage every single night, it's getting frustrating. And like you said, the owner is clearly frustrated. I mean, the move that he made to fire Mo Cheeks showed that, hey, we gotta make some moves here, and it has to happen right now, ASAP. And I wouldn't be surprised if Joe D does not finish this season with the Pistons.
I wouldn't either. I mean, the grace period from 2004 is over.
Exactly. Totally agree.
It's been the dark ages for too long. It's time to move on to a new chapter, find somebody else, somebody not connected to the franchise already.
Not at all. Not a former player. Go away from the former player phase they've been trying to go for, I mean, for years and years. But, yeah. All right, Matt, well, really quickly, 1 minute left. What was your favorite story of the week, man?
My favorite story of the week, something that nobody really talked about. Everett Golson had an interview with Tom Rinaldi for ESPN. Everett Golson, the Notre Dame quarterback,
yeah,
has just been reinstated.
Right.
They said they were talking about him competing for the starting quarterback job, and Golson said, "Nothing has ever been handed to me." Ooh. Everett, why did you get suspended in the first place?
Exactly.
Notre
right?
Dame's PR people have been
terrible.
just pulling their hair
what
out
did that?
That
I didn't see that.
I
wow,
thought it was hilarious. Cool. I laughed out loud.
I tell you what, going on kind of that route, the Griffey interview with Linda Cohn, oh my
Classic.
Goodness. Hilarious stuff there. Griffey has apologized. All right. Well, thanks so much to all of you for tuning in today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic and safe weekend, and be easy, people.